session number 8721, Reel 1.
Mr. Baker, Reel 1. Could you tell me something about your life before the First World War, Mr. Baker?
Yes. I was born at Aston Clinton, Buckinghamshire, in 1896, the 23rd of January. I went to school in the Aston Clinton Infant School, a school provided by the Rothschild family. And then from the infant school, I went to the Church of England Boys' School, Aston Clinton, and I remained there until I was 14. During that time, I played football and cricket and did quite a lot of running, boxing, and many other sports. But my favourite games were soccer and cricket in their season. In 1912... we were the first troop of Boy Scouts in the county, and Rothschilds provided most of the equipment, and they did great work for the village, the Rothschild family.
What sort of things did you do with the Boy Scouts, camps and things?
We had training, you know, with the rifle. We had our own little rifle range, air rifles, of course, and used to shoot up to 50 yards. And I was supposed to be a crack shot in that. Actually, I used to generally win the prize, you know, for the shooting, mostly at 25 yards. And I had my targets until I was quite old, really, and they got lost finally. We had a drill sergeant from the Guards, an ex-Guardsman, who taught us the drill. And Rothschild provided for him, you know, they paid for him. And we were taught in their season the proper way to play cricket. We had an ex-professional provided by Rothschilds, and we all knew how to hold a straight bat. And again, Rothschild did most of the good work in those days. We had camping in the summer holidays, which were brief in those days, only 3 weeks. But we had camping, and that also was in the Rothschild Park, and they provided the tents and also most of the equipment, you know, for the fun of the thing, really. And we all bought our own uniforms, and which, you know, didn't cost very much in those days, only pence. We had very happy times. Then, at 14, I left school, and I went to work in the Rothschild Gardens at Aston Clinton. And I started off on the lawns, leading the horse to mow the lawns in the summer, and leading another one in the winter to pick up the leaves. That was my start off in life. Then I was put into the fruit department, and I learned how to grow pears, peaches, grapes, figs, and all those sort of things, you know, which the very rich used to have. And I stayed with the Rothschilds until I was 18. I left on the 1st of January 1914 and went to Stanmore to work at Stanmore for a lady called Bishop Shine. She was an Austrian lady with loads of cash. And I stayed there. I played football for Stanmore and was in their team, and then and we used to have an 18-hole golf course there, belonging to a private one, and so there I played golf, and I used to run also for Austria Athletic Club, which was the leading cross-country club in those days in the south of England. South of Thames Champions, north of Thames Champions. And then came the war, and that was... I ran my last race. I used to run the mile. And the record in those days was 4:12, held by W.G. George. And I did a 4:14. That was my best, which was only a few steps outside the world's record, really. About 17 yards, I should think. And anyway, August the 4th, 1914.
Had you seen the war approaching? Did you know there was likely to be a war before?
Oh, yes, yes,
yes. What made you think that?
Well, you know, you could sort of hear the news in those days. There was no wireless in those days, but you could read, you know, what was going on. And you knew that war was really imminent, you see, because the Kaiser, he thought he could swamp the world in those days. And but I suppose really and truly, if he'd handled it properly, he would have done. But here we are, August the 4th, and I ran my last race on August the 3rd, August Bank Holiday 1914, a lovely sunny day, and we all knew that war was imminent, yes, and a friend of mine, he was in the Territorials, he came up to run at Elstree in the sports in his uniform. He knew that he'd have to report, you see, that night, and so that everybody knew that it was coming. August the 4th came, and war was declared. Immediately, all sorts of transport started to move. Old double-horsed wagons and all that kind of thing, because there was next to no motor transport in those days, no heavy haulage stuff, you know. There was no sign of any lorries at all, and it was all horses, horse-drawn, and I never seen so many horses appear. And after a few days, brilliant sunny weather, quite a lot of, I should think, several brigades of troops were parked around Stanmore. And they were the expeditionary force, the first ones. They were all regulars, and they were in the Harrow area, you know. Regiments were massing up to go over to France. And some of them, they fought at Mons straight away when they got over there. Well, war fever was working up, and Kitchener, he asked for, in the papers and on placards, for 500,000 men. And everyone, well, not everyone, but a lot of people said, oh, it'll be all over by Christmas, you see. That was the theory, but of course it was not.
Did you think that?
Hmm?
Did you think that?
I didn't know.
Why not?
I thought they wouldn't hardly get started by Christmas, and I was right. And it was marvellous weather, really glorious weather, and had been all that summer. And anyway, after a few days, I phoned up to my mother and said I would like to join the 9th Middlesex, which were going to India. And she said no. She said, you wait until you're 19. See, that was the age in those days, 19 to 35 they had to be, supposed to be. Well, I left it a few days, and I phoned up again, and she said, still said no. So I thought, my friend and I, we saw in the evening paper, men wanted for the Royal Marines for duration of war. So we went up to Whitehall. We arrived there just after 4 o'clock and the office was shut. So we drifted back to Stanmore again and went up the next day, which was the 19th of September. And this time we were there in the morning and we were signed on. And so I went back to Stanmore and phoned up and told my mother that I'd enlisted in the Royal Marines. Went home for a couple of days and then went back to Stanmore with my friend. And then we went on to, went up to Whitehall, where they signed us on, about 10 of us. And we were taken down to Chatham.
Before we go on, can I ask you why exactly you yourself were so keen to enlist? I realise it was probably part of war fever, but could you tell me just why you were so keen?
Well, difficult to say, really. At one, you know, you see, lots of the lads were joining the local regiments, you know, like they were joining the Bucks and the Middlesex, you see. Lads that I knew, you know, and been to school with it, and some of them had played football and cricket with, and they were all joining something or other. All those, the young ones, you know, they were keen. They'd no idea, of course, as to what they were in for, but otherwise there wouldn't have been any army at all. But anyway, that was how it was. And we joined up, you know, hoping for the best. And went down to Stanmore, from Stanmore to Whitehall, and then from Whitehall down to Chatham. Arrived at the barracks, and we were met at the gate by the gate sergeant of the guard, and he directed us to the office, and there we were allocated to the various companies. My friend, I was A company, just inside the barrack gate, and they split us up. My friend, they put him in B company, which was next door. So we started split up, and he said, you won't do any parades until you get your uniform, and you won't be able to go outside the barrack gates until you got your uniform. So we were caged. So we explored the barracks and saw the different places and had a look at, you know, parked our few belongings in the barrack room, which was, the floor was like a deck of a ship, and they always related to it as the deck when they swilled the decks, you know, and it used to be kept spotlessly clean. You could have fed off of the deck. And The bedding was straw in sort of a palliasse thing, stuffed with straw, not proper beds. And periodically you had to go down and empty the old straw out and take straw from a huge stack of straw and stuff the palliasse with it again, you see, and take it back. That was your bedding in those days. And they had beds which folded in half, you know, the bedsteads, they folded in half. And above the bedding you had a rack which held all your belongings, you know, that which were not very many. Anyway, after 4 days, we were taken down and kitted out with our uniform. And then the fun started. We then had to parade at 7 a.m. for physical jerks, and a bit cold it was then. Reveille was 6:30, so it didn't give it too much time to get ready. And there were no washing facilities inside. The washing was outside under a cover and cold water only, no hot water at all. And if you were strong enough to grow whiskers to shave, you had to do your best with cold water, which wasn't all that good. We Anyway, we started off with physical jerks, and that lasted half an hour. And then we came in for breakfast, which chiefly was porridge and bread and butter. That was all there was. The rations were not very good, really, for growing people, especially those who'd lived well at home. And, you know, they were quite a mixed race, because we recruits were pushed in with regulars and reservists, you see. And, well, they taught us, you know, the ropes and told us all they knew, and they were glad to see us. And they made us very welcome, really. You know, the old sweats, they really looked after us ever so well. And we were quite young, you see, most of us were 18, 19, you know.
Did they take advantage of you at all? Did they take advantage of you at all?
None, no. No, not at all. They were treated us ever so well. And our pay was, they told us when we joined up, they told us that our pay, they gave me my regimental number, CH for Chatham, 263S, which was for special service. That was the different number to the regulars, which were in thousands. And that meant that I was the 263rd special service man with Chatham. And they told us that our pay would be the princely sum of 6 shillings and 8 pence per week. That was our pay in those days. And
what happened after breakfast? You were taking us through.
After breakfast, they then did our first parade, which. They lined us up, you know, on the barrack square and started to do form fours and all that kind of thing, you know. Quite the simple drill, really, and marching up and down and right turn and all that kind of thing, you know, left turn and right wheel, all those things, you know, which were quite simple, really. And having been in the Boy Scouts and having been drilled by a guardsman, it was dead easy to me, but some of them, when they said right wheel, sometimes they managed to turn left, which didn't exactly please the drill sergeant, as you can imagine. They ought to have known which were their rights and their lefts, but some of them didn't seem to. Anyway, after a time, they licked us into real shape, you know, and we... After a few weeks, we looked as good as the regulars. Oh, yes. They'd really lashed us into shape. And then, having got over that section, they then took us up onto the lines, as they call it, a big open space, you know, acres of it, up between Chatham and Gillingham. And up there we did extended order attacks and all that kind of thing. But without arms, you know, we used to run along and down we used to go, you see, as though we were making an attack. And we did quite a lot of that. And finally, they said we were ready for the gunnery department at, where was that? Near Gravesend, where we went to do our firing course, and we spent about a fortnight on that, and I did pretty well on that, having been a crack shot, you know, with an air rifle, and the Lee Enfield was quite a good tool, really, you know. You could really knock anything out at 200 yards with that. And finally we were passed out with our gunnery. And
could you tell me can you remember how exactly they trained you at rifle shooting? Can you remember exactly how they trained you at rifle shooting?
Well, in the main objective was, you know, the business of loading. That was the thing which they used to teach you how to load, you know, quickly, you see, and get the five rounds off and then load again. because that was going to be important later on. And they told us, you know, about the site and how to keep it down, you see, and that, you know, where to line up the front site to the back site to get it in the V, you see, and well down in the V, the leading site, you know, into the V, not sticking up above, otherwise you'd be over the top of the target. And anyway, we...
Did you do any route marching?
Oh, route marches, yes, we did plenty of that. We finished our rifle training, and then they started us on long route marches, and we used to go as much as about 15 miles some days, and some of them were a bit footsore by the time they got back, and one day we'd had a 15-miler, and... we had a very nice commanding officer of our company, and we got back and we had our meal laid on for us, which wasn't very good. And Captain Graham, he came in and he said, all right, men, everything okay? No, not okay in those days, everything all right. And there was one of the miners, he spoke up, he said... Yes, sir, he said, for myself, I could eat a curbstone, and I think he could have too. I didn't mention it, but we had 200 of the Notts and Derbys transferred to us to make up number of the regiment, you see. And they were all minor fellows, and they were rough and very fine fellows they were. You know, they could really take it. And... they used to go out on the beer of a night, you know, and they used to quite a number of them used to come in tight, and the beer in those days was 2 pence a pint, and unless they were good drinkers, 3 pints would flatten them, because it was really super beer, you know, and I didn't used to spend much of my money, because I didn't go in for a lot of beer, and I'd nearly always got a few coppers, you know, by me. And so I used to be banker for a lot of these fellows. They used to borrow sixpence, you know, to go out with. Well, you see, that was 3 pints of beer. And, you know, not one of those fellows ever let me down. I always had my money back, yes. And they treated me ever so well. And one called Bob Waldron, he was a huge miner, and... he used to go out and get very solidly tight, and I was in the second bed in the barrack room, and when Bob came in drunk or semi-drunk, he always insisted on kissing me good night, and he said that I looked like his son. I probably did, but, you know, he used to say, good night, Baker boy, I love you, and of course I got, you know, to put up with him, I didn't mind. But he always paid his 6 months back, and they all did, finally. Well, that was how things went. That was just one of those things, you know. That was barrack life. Sometimes they produced a football in the barracks, in the room, and I used to have pot shots at a beer bottle on a block, you know. Well, that was good practice for taking penalties later on, I found, because I got so that I could knock it off with either foot. And very good. And later on, when I used to play, I used to take the penalties, and never missed one in all my life. I took 75 penalties, and they were all in the back of the net. There aren't many that could say that. And anyway, that was part of our training. And we used to have great fun, and the officer of the day used to come round and inspect all the things. It must be in their proper place, you know, all the bedding in order, the strap in its proper place, and all the equipment in its proper place, and the floor had to be spotless, and it certainly was. One night, Peter Kerr and McIlvenny, two Irishmen, they went out on the booze, and they came in very thoroughly tight. And they came in just as lights out. into the barrack room, singing away, you know. And Peter got into bed, and these beds pulled in half, you see, and you know the tail end pulled right out, and then slid up underneath in the daytime, you see. And somebody got out of bed and fixed the bed strap on Peter's bed and pulled it right out. And he went down with a terrific wallop. And in that time, they had just issued us with ammunition. And we then were supposed to be capable of going anywhere in the country if there was a landing. They really, you know, made us capable of taking position anywhere in the country. And Peter, he was flat on his back, well, not exactly flat, at an angle, and "Holy Jesus," he said, "I'll shoot the bloody lot of you." And he got out of bed, well, off the bed, and loaded his rifle. You could hear him loading in the dark. And he fired five rounds, the whole lot, through the ceiling. Fortunately, they went through the floor of the upper deck, and he didn't hit anybody in bed up there. And they went through that deck and out through the roof and knocked the tiles off. And it was a wet night, and it started to come pouring down through the top deck, through their beds, and down through our deck. And within 5 minutes, the guards were up there and collected Peter off and took him off in his shirt and put him in the cooler. But he only had 5 days CB for it, so he got off very light, really. Well, we did the training, and we had Christmas leave.
Ken, before we go, you were taking me through, at one point, through the daily routine, you know, of training.
Training.
Typical day. You got as far as the morning parade. Can you just finish off what you'd normally do in a day? You
know? In the day.
Yeah.
In the day. Most of the time was marching up and down. Nearly always marching. And you're almost mechanical. You know, you were form fours and all that kind of thing. And you did it umpteen times in a day. And occasionally a special parade about something or other. And I remember one parade, there was a fellow who'd committed some offence, which even the Royal Marines couldn't stand. And they had him out in front of the whole battalion, and they cut off his shoulder straps and read out quite the charges and all that kind of thing, and said, "And you are discharged with ignominy." I can remember that clearly.
What was the charge he was on?
But I don't know what the charge was. He'd done something which was not to be tolerated by the Royal Marines. So I never did know what he'd done. But they sacked him on that strength and in front of the whole battalion. That was in the days when they wanted men, yes.
What time would you take lunch about?
1 o'clock, yes.
And then in the afternoon?
And we had an hour, and then we were at it again at 2 o'clock until 4. And that was our day's work. We finished at 4.
Did you ever visit the local towns yourself?
The local town? Oh, yeah. Yes, at night. Yes, we used to go out, you know, to the various places. And Sundays we used to do a church parade in the dockyard church. And after that we were free in the afternoons. And Saturdays we used to get some football. And they had a very strong team at Chatham, and I was fairly good. I was left back for the battalion, so I suppose I must have struck them as being somewhat useful, and which was quite good really to get in the battalion, you know, quite an honour really. I enjoyed it. And Sundays, we used to go to church at Strood, yes, which is quite close to Chatham. And then the time drifted on.